And welcome to another episode of GT Radio, Conversations with Tino. Today I have a great friend on the show and a fellow Italian, Michael Cimino. Michael, how are you, buddy?
Very good, Tino. I'm not quite the Italian that you are. I'm a little bit the watered down version. You make it homemade. I'll still have my sauce in a jar, but I'm working on it.
Hey man, there's nothing that says you're not the original. Trust me on that one. And by the way, I'm just gonna tell you, I didn't tell you this before,
no.
But just before the show, your dad called me. This is the first time this has ever happened, okay? And so he's like, hey, it's Michael Cimino. And I'm like, Mike, you were supposed to go. No. He goes, I'm Michael's dad. I go, oh, okay. He's like, hey, I tried to call into the show. Anyways, he was so sweet, great guy. How old
yeah,
is he?
Yeah.
He must be like
my dad
in his 80s, right?
My dad will be 87 this year.
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, did he come from Italy or was it his grandparents?
His dad, my grandpa Nick, came from Italy, and as did my mother's, my mother's dad too, Ralph, and they both came to, both came to America, and right off the boat, as they say, and settled down in Little Italy, Mott Street and Grand Street,
So we spoke about that the other day, and we ended up talking about something Italians do from time to time. You're telling about some food, how you grew up in New York,
yes,
and your grandmother's cooking. Tell us a little bit about those times, because I think, everybody hears about Little Italy and New York, and this, you're the first person we've had on the show that actually lived it. So tell us a little bit about what those times were like when you were a kid growing up.
Well, I tell you, there was a special treat went on, and we grew up, I was born in Queens, not too far actually from Resorts World Casino in New York City, but we moved out to Suffolk County. It's about 50 miles, east of Manhattan. And a lot of, mostly Sundays after church, we'd pack up in the car, my older sister, my younger sister, and later on my younger brother, and we'd drive into the city and mostly visited my mom's parents right there on Grand Street and Mulberry Street. And I have to tell you, we didn't know from anything back then. We didn't wear seatbelts. There weren't airbags. We were just in the car. My dad listened to the AM talk radio the entire time. We were just happy to go anywhere. And we went into the city, and you walk in, and all the buildings were walk-ups. And the whole building, 5-6 floors, nothing but Italians. The smells of garlic and eggplant frying, it was unreal. But was really what was special about it was a lot of times that was the only time I would see my cousins, and we'd all come in together. Even though we lived on the island, in fact, my mom's sister lived 5 houses down from us. But when we went into the city to visit grandma, that was a special, special time. And a lot of who we are, without even knowing, comes from being programmed when we're young. Those experiences, I was very fortunate. All 4 of my grandparents, they lived into their 80s and beyond, so I really got a chance to experience some special times with them. Yeah, that was great.
That's a very unique period in American history, because you had that first generation of Italians that came through Ellis Island, and you got to experience those people. You got to live with them and be with them, and I think that must have been just an incredible time for you.
It was, and it was an incredible learning time, because when I was a young kid, my grandfathers would take me for walks, and I would hear the stories about how when they came over, they learned English as fast as they could, because the Irish cops would smack them with the billy clubs and say, hey, this is America, speak American. And they quickly learned that, there's an assimilation. And my dad tells me stories that, my dad was born in 1930. He told me stories of what it was like growing up during World War II in an Italian neighborhood when Italy was, part of the Axis powers. And there was a lot at that time, a lot of split loyalties, people who had just come over from Italy. Now they're in America. And, how am I working with this? It was like, long before there was Google, there were grandparents, and the grandparents gave you so much exposure culturally, music and the song and obviously the food, but just the family and what it means to be part of a family. And there was always chaos, of course, which is part of my management style. I'm just used to a lot of frenzy, a lot of noise. It doesn't really upset me. It's part of, you know, when it's a really calm day, it's kind of a bizarre day at work when it's very, very calm. It's like I need a little bit of excitement going on.
Yeah, well, excitement is part of the way the Italians are too in their lives and all the stuff going on and how they talk and, you know, and everything like that. And I'm Canadian, so I came in. My parents came in the 50s. It was a different wave, you know, so I'm first generation and it was a completely different thing. But I did have great, great uncles that came to Ellis Island. And, you know, it was tough. Like you said, the Irish were there and they were not very amenable to have immigrants at that time. So
I should point out to you, Tina, that you mentioned you're Canadian, that the U.S. men's curling team beat the Canadian curling team today. So that was, you know.
Man. I'll tell you, man, that's a bad one. And the women hockey team lost, too, to the States. So
that's right.
Canada had a double whammy. And I think the hockey is harder than the curling because hockey is, you know, we own hockey. So
hockey is the best game in the world.
That's a big one. Yeah, and it ended up in a shootout. So, anyways, you know, go figure. Let's talk a little bit about your first job, because most of the guests, and I would say all of the guests that we've had on the show, come through the casino business. And this job that you have now is your first job. Let's talk a little bit, the first job in the casino. But let's talk a little bit about the jobs, your first job, and then how you progressed.
Yeah.
And got into the gaming business.
Yeah, I mean, in high school, I wanted to be a sports writer. My junior high won the bicentennial writing contest. That was back in 1976, and I said, "Boy, this is easy to write." And I actually won a hockey stick and $10, and so writing just came easy to me. So. You know, I love marine sciences, but I thought I'd have a better career as a journalist. So I went to, you know, I went out to Ohio, ended up working for a daily newspaper my last year of college covering Division I basketball. And I came back to Long Island and I worked for a large chain of weeklies as a sports writer, then later on as a news editor and such. So my background really is in news gathering. You know, from there, it was a series of transitions. I went from print journalism to public relations, working for school districts and later for the Department of Ed and for the City University of New York. And that's where I started actually doing some advertising at the City University. They gave me a little bit of money and asked them if I could help them with a recruitment campaign. And I said, boy, I kind of like this. And then later on, I went to work for an aquarium, doing PR and community relations and advertising and marketing. And then later on, the last job I had before I started my own business, I worked for another cultural attraction, New York Hall of Science, as the marketing communications director. So I built up all these skills and all these contacts and ended up for about 10 years running an advertising and PR firm, focusing almost entirely on nonprofits, you know, small to mid-sized nonprofits. And then, you know, It was a great experience. It got me a lot of opportunities to stay home, you know, work close to home, see my kids growing up, be able to attend the dance recitals and the little league practices and such like that. So, you know, I used to teach as an adjunct at a college on Long Island, and I used to tell my students that life is nothing but a series of forks in the road. There's very little part of your life where you're going down a straightaway for very long. Usually there's always decisions to make. Do I do this? Do I do that? Do I do this? Do I do that? And that's really how, you know, my career has been. It's just, you know, I take a fork in the road and, you know, just go with it. And, you know, you arm yourself with the tools and the skills and the knowledge that you've built upon, including knowledge that you gained hanging out with your grandparents when you were younger, you know, learning those valuable lessons. You know, my dad, all the kidding aside, my dad used to say to us all the time, you know, life's not fair. Life's not easy. You know, get up and get your ass to work. And, that's kind of like the Savino motto, and that's what we've been doing, and that's what I've been doing. And I guess it's worked out pretty well because you have me on your radio show.
Absolutely. Hey, so So how did you end up landing the Resorts World gig? How did that transpire?
Well, it's all about networking. So one of my clients, when I was running my business, Headline Communications, one of my clients was the Queens Economic Development Council. And a subset of that was the Queens Tourism Council. And I was doing some advertising, media placement, and creative work for them. And my contact there was a young woman by the name of Michelle Stoddard. So Michelle and I kept in contact, and she ended up taking a job as a director of public relations and community development for Resorts World when it opened back in October of 2011. And she and I stayed in contact, and she knew that I was starting to think about, you know, my kids were getting older. I just went through a divorce. Maybe it's time for me to go back to an organization. So she sends me a job description one day for an advertising manager. And I emailed her back and I said, okay, if I know of anybody who's interested, I'll let you know. And she basically said to me, no, you know, I'll clean it up. She says, no, dummy, you. And I said, me? I go, I don't have any casino experience. And she goes, it's advertising in this area. I said, oh, well, that's what I do. So I sent her my resume. She passed it along to, at that time, our senior VP of marketing, Missy Lawrence. I got called for an interview, came in, and within a day I was hired, and the rest has been
What transpired in the interview? Why do you think? What did she ask you? Someone comes into a casino, never worked in a casino before. What do you think made her hire you?
Well, I tell you, there were two things. And Missy is now the president of Resorts World Bimini, one of our other properties, with the offices based in Miami. So Missy and I are talking, and, you know, a typical advertising manager job, you're managing an agency, you're managing all the collateral messaging that's on the floor, all the direct mail, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, writing and editing, well, that's my journalism background, and doing, you know, handling advertising. Well, I ran an agency, I worked for some of the biggest agencies, blah, 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 blah. And I remember saying to her, you know, we have an agency that does this? And she said, yeah. I said, I can do this. You know, I can do this. We can save all the commissions. So she looked at me. I go, I'm serious. I said, we're paying commissions, right? The Place Media. She goes, yeah. I said, well, Queens, Brooklyn, Long Island, Manhattan. I have been doing this since, you know, 1993. And I think that was much. I think that was a selling point because I just, you know, everyone who's listening, knows. Yeah, if you know, the standard agency commission on media placement is 15%. So if I'm placing advertising for Tino and GT Advertising, I say, Tino, this ad's going to cost you $1,000. So Tino gives me $1,000, and I give the newspaper $850, and I pocket that $150. That's how agencies make their commission. Now, it could be negotiable depending upon when you're getting into very significant sums of money, national accounts and such, that 15% can come down. And I'm not going to say specifically what our budget is and what we were paying commission-wise.
Yeah,
but
yeah, of course.
Right away.
Of course.
Right away, I trust me on this. What I was offered to start was way, 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 way less than what they were paying in commissions. So, I remember coming home saying to my wife, I think I've got a job working in a casino. And the irony is, up until that point, I can count on one hand the number of times I've actually been in a casino. So,
yeah, interesting.
You know, but almost everything that I did in that first year or two, I've done before, just not for a casino.
Got it. Interesting. Very, very interesting. So, which brings me to the next point, and you and I have talked about this in the past when we've gotten together. Most casinos are regional casinos. Okay, that's a fact. With the exceptions of a few places like Vegas and Reno, somewhat, and maybe Atlantic City, but most casinos are regional casinos. And I know you guys draw on a very small radius. Tell us a little bit about that theory, and tell us a little bit about, you know, knowing your area, knowing your customers, and also about how that can shift from block to block almost. Talk about a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, Resorts World Casino, New York City, owned by the Genting Group, opened its doors in October of 2011. I came on board the following April of 2012. So they managed to open the doors and be successful for 6 months before I showed up. I don't know how they possibly managed that, but they did. So anyways, but yeah, the majority of our business is within 50 miles. And when we opened our doors, and we're in Southern Queens, really right across the street from JFK Airport, for folks trying to picture the location from out of state, you know, there were already established casino markets. Obviously, Atlantic City, and you know, to the south of us, about 3 hours south, and then about 2.5 to 3 hours, slightly northeast of us, is Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods, and then just to our north, just outside of the New York City boroughs, was Empire City Casino. So there was already, you know, and then of course there are casinos in eastern Pennsylvania. You know, this is one of the things we'll talk about later on, the saturation and perhaps oversaturation in certain markets.
Yes.
So we came in, you know, for us it was all about, you know, trying to retain that New York State gamer that was for the most part leaving the state and putting their bets in, out of state. And obviously with, you know, we have a 70% tax rate on, you know, Tino, for every dollar that we generate, 70 cents goes up. Actually, in truth be told, 78 cents, but we have an 8% reimbursement on the marketing end, but about 70 cents on the dollar goes up to Albany before we even start paying our own bills. So for us, the critical that we really maximize that local market, we have to get a volume business. You know, we need to get that 20,000 people every single day and 25 to 30,000 on the weekends. And we do that through a combination of a very smart direct mail and reinvestment program that my boss, Brad Egner, the VP of marketing, has really, really drilled down deep smartly on this. And then the ability to continue to deliver an overall experience to our customer that's not just on the gaming side, but also on the you know, the visitor amenities side, whether it be the free nightly entertainment or the various food outlets that we have. So we're not considered just the proverbial slots in a box, but we're more of a full entertainment. And you know, it's, you know, people joke with me, oh, you got so many people in New York, you just open the doors and they come in. Well, you know, it's not quite that easy, you know. As we all know, there's only a certain percentage, at best 30% of the market that games anyway. And for us, we're not of the Vegas style casino that can bring in that current A-lister and make the money on the entertainment or on the hotel. We are building a hotel, but right now we don't. Our revenue has to come from the gaming side, which is kind of a bit of a shift in the industry. You know, more revenue now is being focused on the ancillaries, on the entertainment, on the food, on the hotel, less on the gaming. So for us, it's really knowing the market and segmenting it accordingly. You know, we know that, and we all know this, that we all make more money on slots than we do on tables. Now, our tables are all electronic, so we have a slight advantage on labor that other casinos don't enjoy. We don't have to pay the dealers. We don't have to pay the pit boss. We don't have to put in that extra layer of surveillance because all our games are electronic and they play faster. So we do have advantages there. But at the same time, we have to make sure that what we're offering our customers, they want today. They may want it, they may have liked it yesterday, but today's a new day. New York City moves very fast, and no matter whether it's a casino operation or a sports venue or a museum, if you're not staying absolutely up to the minute relevant on what that consumer wants, you're falling behind.
Yeah, so it's a myth what they're saying, because you're in the city, they just come in because there's a lot of other distractions, right? That's a myth,
well,
right?
Absolutely. I mean, we always talked about this on the museum side, the discretionary dollar. So they'll pay admission to come in on a museum. We can't make money on memberships. We've got to get them to buy the extra ride or buy the 3D show or go to the gift shop or go to food and beverage. we need to be able to get them to spend more. Well, our customer, the New York City customer, has a lot of options. I mean, there's a casino that opened up on Long Island, and a casino just opened up about 2.5 hours, 3 hours north of the city. So there's more market competition coming in, and they just don't line up and wait to come in. We have to continually pepper them with information, free play offers, promotions, everything that everyone else is doing, only we have to do it at such a higher frequency in order to make the numbers that we need to make to be profitable.
It's a faster pace. No time to think. You got to think on your toes, right? You got to think, boom.
No question. Yeah, I mean, we are strategic, but we're strategic at a very much of a different pace, because the reality is we don't have the luxury, you know, to give something 3 months. We just don't. Our year over year numbers. I mean, we have to hit them every day. We have to hit them every day. We don't have a shoulder season, or we don't have a peak. I mean, everyone does better post tax return, but our numbers have to go up during that time period. We don't have 1 week out of 52 where our numbers can go down and we're okay. They have to be at a certain level every week. We are on that tightrope. And again, you know, New York City, for all the great talent that you can pull from New York City, also comes the cost of labor. And we have a lot of great employees, from our president, Scott Molina, all the way down. But it's not an inexpensive town to operate labor costs. So we have a very big chunk of our budget is on labor. Hotel Motel Trade Council shop, so we have those dynamics at play. The 78% gross tax revenue, the added competition that's come
unbelievable.
In. But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, and you love it. I know you love it. Michael, talk to us a little bit about, you know, you came from these other businesses and you knew the market, but what in your mind, what was the biggest hurdle you had to overcome when you got into resort world? What was the thing that you were like, oh, okay, I gotta, you know?
I know the moment that it hit me that right now I'm treading water with lead weights around my ankles. It was one of the first marketing meetings that I sat in with the entire marketing division. And somebody said something, and I took a little piece of paper, and I wrote down the question. I handed it to Missy Lawrence, and she said to me, I'll tell you later. And the question I asked was, what is ADT? I had zero idea what ADT was. You know, and marketing is full of acronyms, quite frankly, way too many acronyms and buzzwords and such like that. But yeah, so for me, it was understanding what hold was and handle was and coin in was and ADT and ADW and reinvestment strategy. And why are we giving free play to this group at this age group and this day at this time period? You know, it was learning a whole new business, which I have to tell you, Tino, made it that much more exciting, because nobody had to teach me how to media buy. I'll say this right now. You can't find a better media buyer for the boroughs and Long Island than me. And I do it pennies on the dollar. My writing and editing, I'll put up against anybody's, and I'll put my management against anybody's. I've got a fabulous direct report team of five tremendous managers, Wendy, Angela, Sherwin, Elson, and Dia. I mean, they're balls to the walls, they work hard. I had no idea what the hell the casino industry was. So the biggest hurdle I had was, while I was busy developing messaging and advertising campaigns and targeting our goals to the media that goes with it, I had to play catch up on the basics, the absolute basics. And I guess I've caught up.
Yeah, you definitely have. And you definitely, you know, a lot of it has to do with character and personality. Mike, talk to us a little bit about, you touched on this before in one of the answers that you gave, and you talked about the casinos popping up all over and the market being saturated. And that market is especially saturated because everybody's like, oh, you know, New York, it's got all these people and we're going to get the market share. And, you know, Foxwoods used to have lineups. And talk to us a little bit about that, because that's happening almost in every market. But I feel like that market even more, right?
Well, yeah, out of nowhere. I mean, our friends up at Empire, before we showed up in 2011, I'm not saying that they had it easy, but Connecticut was 3 hours away, and Atlantic City was 3+ hours away from them, and there was no one else operating in the city. Well, fast forward from 2011 on, a small casino opened up in Suffolk County. A big casino just opened. Resorts World Catskills just opened about 3 hours north of the city. And there's more discussions about, you know, whether or not Central or Northern New Jersey might be getting something. Of course, there's the online dynamic is coming into play. You know, one of the things that I've always believed in, and this is no matter where I've done marketing, whether it's at a college or whether it's at an aquarium or an art museum or wherever, you're not going to take somebody who's not interested in your product or service and convince them to become interested. Either you're interested in learning about physics or marine biology, or you're not. Either you're interested in playing slot machines or blackjack, or you're not. So you can put 20 casinos together, it's not going to do a whole lot to grow your market, because people who aren't going to gamble aren't going to gamble. So what is happening to that base customer when you are saturating and ultimately maybe perhaps oversaturating in a market? You're all fighting now over the same customer. And, you know, it's really tough. And I think we saw a little bit of that recently in Atlantic City when several casinos closed their doors. It just became to the point where at one time, right, it was Vegas and Reno and AC. But then all of a sudden, Delaware has casinos and Pennsylvania has casinos.
Yeah.
And people are saying, why do I have to drive 4, 5, 6 hours? Why am I flying to go play Wheel of Fortune?
Yeah.
It's literally
right.
A half an hour away from me. And,
yeah.
And you know, movie theaters, I had this discussion with several colleagues the other day about how movie theaters are trying to market themselves now because of over-the-top TV, the Netflix and the Hulus and such like that. We
yeah.
all have 60, 70-inch high-def TVs in our house. Why the heck are we going to go drag our butts out on a Saturday night and pay $20 a ticket for a movie with some yahoo yapping behind you in the background when you have a great experience at home? So that convenience piece. So it's really, I think it's putting a stress factor across the country in markets where we're seeing more and more, you know, competition pop up.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that Vegas has done a really good job of, they keep reinventing themselves and giving people a reason to travel, you know, to have that alternate experience. And I think the
right.
other markets just, they have, you know, especially Atlantic cities that it relied on the day trippers, they never really evolved. And, you know, when the recession hit, they got killed. And Vegas has always been good that way. They've always kept reinventing themselves. And like you said, you got to make it bigger. You got to make it more spectacular to lure people to come in because you have a lot of competition, right?
Well, that's it. We are in the process right now. We just broke ground. We are doing an expansion, and we'll be opening. It's set for spring of 2020. A large expansion will include a 400-room hotel. There'll be about 30,000 square feet of new gaming. We're going to be having new spas, new restaurants and such, because we know ourselves that we need to stay relevant to our consumer. We need to be, you know, we need to invent the next thing. And, you know, we all talk about that at the G2Es, and we talk about that at the marketing technology. You know, what are we doing to stay current? What are we doing to stay ahead of the competition? What are we doing? What's the next thing? But you know what similar patterns are between all attractions is good quality experience. We've all gone to casinos and we've had magical experiences, and we've all gone to casinos where we leave shaking our heads saying, oh, I guess they don't want my business anymore. And I've been in retail stores and felt the same way. I've been in museums and felt the same way. I've been in sports arenas and felt the same way. You know, those are the basics that we all want. Whether you're going to a jazz concert or a poker tournament, you want to feel like the people that are hosting you really want you to be there and are going out of their way to make you feel welcome. You know, customer service will never go out of style. So as we're busy figuring out what the next thing is, it's really important that we continue to focus on the customer, because one day soon, the customer can do all their gaming online, and then we're all stuck.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Okay, we're going to take some questions here. Let's see who's up there. It looks like we got a lot of people calling in, so this is good. Hang on one second.
If my father's calling in, hang up on him.
Hello, this is GT Radio. Did you have a question for Michael?
Hey, Tino, Mike Hanui, how's it going?
Good.
Michael,
how are you?
Michael, meet Michael. Yes.
Hey, Michael, how's it going? Hey, I love the story. Always my favorite, you know, especially when I hear, you know, you're coming in from an outside industry. But now that you're in it and you've been doing it, you know, for X amount of years now, what's the next step for you? Where do you want to go? Where do you see your career going next?
Well, I'm 56, and I love where I work. Last week I was having my weekly direct reports, my advertising, AV, events, database, and analytics, and I just happened to say, this might be the best – I've had some great jobs and some great bosses. I said, this might be the best job I ever had. And one of my people said, you being serious? I said, yeah. I said, first of all, they've treated me really well. Number two, they're investing in this property. I said, and I work with great people. So we're expanding. So, and I've been in museums during expansions. They're very exciting times. So where do I want to be? Exactly where I am. Now, I have a 3-hour a day commute, so I've got to figure that one out, because, you know, that's not the best plan. But I love the people that I work with, and I love what I'm doing. So I'm gonna as long as they'll have me, I think I'll stick around.
That's great.
That's part of the job.
Michael, did you have another question?
I'm always a big fan of the startup story, so I kind of got to hear that a little bit. But, you know, one of the things that you mentioned, you know, you had your meeting with your direct reports, and, you know, it's one of the things I get passionate about is kind of, you know, developing that next generation. So for you, what are some of the things that, even though you're coming from outside the industry, what are some of the things that you like to pass on to your direct reports to kind of help develop them for the next level?
Yeah, really, really thank you for that question. You know, I touched on it earlier when Tino and I were reminiscing about the old neighborhood and such, but the work ethic that my parents put us through. I generally come in the office around 8:30, and I'm generally leaving after 6:30. On Thursdays, I'm there till late, and on Fridays, I'm there till midnight. So no one's going to outwork me. And I'm trying to pass that down to my guys. I don't want them to be slaves. I've got a great active life outside of work. I cook, I garden, I hike, I dive. But passing down a work ethic, number one, and the passion to do what it is. And I know, it sounds so cliche-ish, but if you can't get excited about what you're doing, find out what makes you excited and go do that, because we are really not here very long. And I've been in jobs when I was younger that I'm like, oh, my God. I was at a job. I had a 15-minute commute. It was the worst job I ever had, and after 2 months, I quit. 15 minutes away. This job, I'm an hour and a half without traffic, an hour and a half away, and I can't wait to get to work. So I want to pass the hard work and the passion down to my people.
I think that's great. I think that's definitely spot on. Hey, speaking of work, I think I got to get myself to another dinner, but I wanted to call in specifically for you, sir, and I appreciate you answering.
Thank you, Mike. Have
Thank
a great
you,
evening.
Thank you, Michael. Always a pleasure.
Have a good one, guys.
Actually, Mike is an old friend. We started in the business together in Vegas, him and my business partner, and is all a group of people that started the Flamingo in the late 90s. So he's a very knowledgeable guy.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the other pieces that I try to pass down to my team is the value of relationships. Because when you have people that you're working with, like you and Golly Tino, when you know that the people that are helping you do good things, that they actually really care about it and you can trust them and they're going to get you the results, that's invaluable. And just the way I kept in contact with Michelle Stoddard after she left Queens Tourism and went to the casino and later on brought me in, and then she and I ended up bringing in Angelo, who we knew from the events world in Queens, and now Angela's running our events and entertainment. When you have good quality people in your life, like family, you hang on to them and you take care of them. They're going to take care of you. Never let go.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the next question. Hello, GT Radio. Do you have a question for Michael?
Hi, this is Maggie. I work for an advertising agency now, and I used to do the marketing for a small casino. So my question is about the millennial generation and how you're utilizing, you know, your resources in the new digital world to reach them. We're seeing we work with casinos in a lot of industries, but we're seeing a lot of them shift from traditional media buys to, you know, more of the digital side. And casinos are a little slower than some industries, but I'm just curious how it is in New York City and, you know, your take on that.
Sure. I'm sorry, I didn't get your name. Can I get your name?
Maggie.
Maggie?
Yes.
So, Maggie, you work for an advertising agency that works with casinos, but I trust that none of them are in my competitive marketplace?
100%. I live in California.
I'm just teasing. No, listen. Digital.
You had to go in there. You had to go in there for a sec.
Anyone who's in the New York City area that's seen our advertising knows that we're across the board. We're in radio and TV. We're in print. We're in out of home, and we are in digital. And we have moved more into digital. And we've moved into digital not because, oh my God, everybody's going into digital, but because there's a portion of our market that responds to digital. And this is one of those factors that Tino and I talked about earlier. I don't care what you're marketing, what you're advertising. It's all about two pieces. It's about your product or service and the message that you want to convey, and the receiver. To whom do you want to, you know, the 75-year-old, like my dad, who's even older, if we want to reach them, I know that print still works for them, and advertising on morning news, because they're not DVRing it, they're not fast-forwarding it, it's not background. They're watching the news because they really want to see the same story over and over and over and over again. But that 30-year-old who's walking around with their mobile phone as if it's their life, you know, their life meter, they're not doing it the same way. You know, for them, it's all about apps. So we are doing that. And here is the nice part about digital is it's the data reporting on it, your open rates, your click-through rates, you know, the dwell time and such. It's giving you tremendous data. Now, here's the bad part about digital. I know that testimonial, especially on radio, which happens to be the favorite media of mine to buy because you could do more with radio than any other medium. I know that resonates. I know when Joe Causey from CBS FM comes out on a Friday night when we're having a disco night, that Joe, who's a legend in local New York City radio, is going to bring a couple of hundred fawning women with him and fill up our bar 360. I know that for a fact because it happens every time. He's like a local god. Digital doesn't have that same passion yet. You know, you can retarget and you can programmatic and you can drill down until the cows come home. It doesn't have that same connection because there's no personality to it. So what I would suggest, Maggie, for your campaigns and everybody else's is you got to do a mix. if you're putting all your eggs in one basket, that's a very, very risky proposition, one that doesn't work for us because, and here's the reason why, right next door to Grand Street and Mulberry Street, where my family grew up, very Catholic, white, Italian, English speaking, two blocks over is Canal Street, and now it's all Chinese. So yep. The white people are playing slots, but the Chinese people are coming to Resorts World, and they're playing baccarat. And we've got to communicate with them in their language. And it's literally, it's a 1 to 2 block changeover. It's not like counties or boroughs or states. So the digital will give you pieces of that. You can drill down to a zip code. You can drill down to behavioral targeting. Oh, I always go on the internet. I look up travel. So, okay, great. This would be a prime customer for, you know, the Bellagio or the Wynn, because this guy, Mike, is in New York, is always looking to travel to Vegas. But that doesn't mean necessarily that there's a loyalty to it. So it really is a mix, and you've probably heard this in, you know, Advertising 101. The media mix has to be there. I do love the digital because it gives us the ability to do tracking and to do data collection. And that millennial that everyone's chasing down, I have my own theory on the millennial. I think we're chasing ghosts. You know, that certainly would be an area. But my dad blogs. He's 87. He's got the range of pundit. He blogs. He won't use an ATM card. He's got a smartphone. My mother-in-law is on there, you know, doing FaceTime chatting with her granddaughter. So it's also a myth that people over 65 aren't embracing technology. In fact, it's one of the fastest growing age segments for technology.
Correct.
So yeah. Just the way I was playing catch-up, they're playing catch-up too.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Maggie. Thank you for calling in.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Maggie.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Great questions.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah. Hang on a sec. Hello. This is GT Radio. You have a question for Mr. Savino.
Hey, guys. Michael here. don't you love? I heard Mike Kay's call earlier, but don't you love that we work in an industry where he says, "Oh, I got work to do. I got a dinner to go to." Yeah, okay.
I don't think we've had so many Michaels on one show. So many.
I know. Yesterday I had a business meeting in the city. It was with, you talk about good partners, Dave DeCina at Madison Square Garden. So I had to have a dinner meeting with Madison Square Garden. And tomorrow I'm going to have a lunch meeting with Andriana over at the Barclays Center. So, like, this is a pretty good industry that our big business meetings can be with really fun people in really cool venues. Not bad.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. It's the perk.
I started at night. It's one of the things that attracted me at 19. I started in Atlantic City at 19 for a summer job and then kind of stuck it out and, you know, made a career of it and ran into Galliantino with the Flamingo years back and, you know, we've been plugging away at it ever since. So
there you go.
Yep. I am now on the advertising side, having sat in the director of marketing chair, you know, for a little while, coming up in the industry. What do you think from our perspective, what do you think the greatest assets for the best agencies that you've worked with in the past, not just in the casino industry, but what do you think the best assets that from an agency standpoint you worked with and some of the ones that had some challenges for you in the past?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same the criteria, client service. The ones that I've had the best experiences with had great client service, and the ones that I didn't have good experiences with had terrible client service. I ran a very small firm. There were five of us. I made sure I saw every single client at least once a week. Every single client at least once a week. I've experienced situations where we haven't seen the agency for months. Months! And I'm like, are you kidding me? Seriously? I see my dentist twice a year. I see my therapist once a month. I'm not seeing my agency. Am I seeing my client for 4 months, 5 months?
Yeah.
It's like, seriously. Yeah. And then the other part is effort. The ones who are good give you a big effort, and the ones who aren't good, they just phone it in. What do I mean by that? They give everybody the same media plan, or they're calling up and say, yeah, give me a $10,000 2-week run of station schedule. Yeah, if you could throw in some bonus $5 and $10, that'd be great. I was like, that's not the way you buy radio. No, I want three live reads on Jim and Kelly in the morning, and then I want the afternoon contest with Fingers in the afternoon, and I want that van appearance to come over and, hey, next Thursday night, you think you can bring your promo crew out because we're having a spot? I mean, it's effort. Some people make the effort, I guess it's the same thing when it comes to with attention. Make the effort on the work you're delivering. Make the effort on the client attention. Attention breeds retention. In our personal relationships, if we put effort and we put attention into our relationships, we tend to have really good relationships. When we don't put attention and effort into our relationships, we tend to have really lousy relationships. And so, to me, that's the point. So if you're an agency out there that lost business, think – and I always tell my own managers this. Even if we didn't screw up, even if it was another department, the first question we ask ourselves is, could we have done something to lessen that other department's screw up? Always look within first. So if you're an agency that lost a business, don't blame the client. Take a look at your own effort. I guarantee you that you were getting lazy and complacent and you were taking that business for granted.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a
appreciate
good point.
Appreciate the insight. A lot of good stuff there. That's why it's 6:15 in California time and I'm still in the office.
Well, that's why it's 9:15. That's why it's 9:15 New York time, and I'm still doing casino business, you know?
Beautiful, beautiful.
Great. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you. All
we've
right.
gotten
great stuff.
We've gotten two Michaels and a Maggie.
I know. The three M's. All right. Let's go to the next caller here. Let's see what transpires here. Hang on one sec. Let me see here. Okay.
Hello.
This is GT Radio. Do you have a question for Michael?
Yeah. Hi, Michael. I think you touched upon it a bit before. I want to know how did you apply your previous experience that you have to the casino business? And the second part of the question, how has this informed how you recruit and train your new hires?
Okay. Yeah. Can I get your name?
It's Matt.
Matt?
Yeah.
All right. We did touch on it briefly before, but I don't care if you. There's a term I use. I call it admissions marketing, which is a fancy way of saying got to get people in the front door. And I used to do presentations called spinning the turnstiles. So you got to get people in the front door. If you're marketing at the Garden or the Barclays Center, you want fans to come in the door. If you're marketing at Resorts World Casino NYC, you want your gamers to come in the front door. If you're marketing at the New York Aquarium, you want your visitors to come through the front door. So you got to get them in the front door. Getting people in the front door, it's really what there's an old PR model: race, research, assess, communicate, and evaluate. And we've kind of tweaked that a little bit. And you can find this, by the way, on my LinkedIn site. I go through all this minutia. Research, analyze, capitalize, and evaluate. And the communication step, there is this ACT, as I call it. A is create awareness. So I don't care if you're selling widgets. If you want people to buy your widgets, the first thing you have to do is create that A. You have to create that awareness. Hey, we exist. Then there's that C. What is C? It's the compelling message. Why should I care about your widget? Why should I care about your casino? I've got 20 others I can go to. What is the compelling message or messages that really make you stand apart from your competition? And then once you've created the awareness and you've told them that compelling message, then comes the T. Execute the transaction. Get them in the door. Give them that free place. Send them that membership card. Whatever it is that can bring them in. Give them that comp hotel with the tickets for the show. Those skills that I've learned, those go across the board. I could leave the casino world tomorrow and walk across the street to JFK Airport and go to work for JetBlue, and the same marketing foundations of skills and knowledge will transfer over. Almost all of this transfers over. If you're a really good customer service rep at a retail outlet, let's say like a Macy's, you can be a really good customer service rep at a casino. If you're a really good short order cook at a diner, you could be a really good cook at a casino. Probably the only area you couldn't easily transfer over is becoming a slot attendant. That you kind of have to learn the business. But everybody else, people in museums who are doing membership can easily become a member rewards representative at a casino. It's the same exact skills. Sometimes we think, oh, you know, because we're in this industry, nobody else can do this. That's a lot of baloney. You know, I came in as the advertising manager. Now I've got really 6 direct reports. I'm the marketing director. And I've worked at one casino my entire life. And, oh, by the way, we're the busiest casino in the country. So, you know, I know I've got great people above me, and I've got great people below me, but I have to be somewhat knowledgeable of what I'm doing, and I had no prior experience doing this. So all the skills, the communication skills, the writing skills, the ability to go up to a customer and say, good evening, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, how are you doing tonight? How is everything? Are you enjoying your time? What could we do better? Museums have been doing that forever. We were afraid to talk to a gamer because, oh, we're going to interrupt their gambling experience. Fine, get them on the way out. How did we do tonight? Did we do a good job? So all those skills can apply across the board. In fact, I would tell you, if you're in casino, and I've met a lot of casino marketing people in the past who have like 10 jobs in the past 7 years, like, you know, work on your skills. You may be surprised that you may be able to go somewhere else and have a rock star career for 15 years somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Great.
So
I don't know if that
answered your question totally, but yeah.
Oh, it did. Thanks a lot. That was great.
You're very welcome.
All right. Go to the next one. Hello, this is Conversations with Tino, GT Radio. We have Michael Savino. Do you have a question for him?
Yes, Michael. It's Richard Hoffman. How are you?
Richard, how are you?
Not bad. My question for you is, what accomplishment, either personal or business-related, are you the most proud of and why?
Well, I won't go into my personal accomplishments. I've got, you know, fabulous kids and and all that kind of stuff, and you know, I was a hell of a scuba instructor for many years, and I'm a pretty good barbecue guy. I come out on the weekends, I'll smoke you up a brisket. You know, there's a few points in my life. I remember years ago when I worked for the aquarium, the Wildlife Conservation Society sent me down to Washington to be the representative down there for the Year of the Coral Reef, and every environmental organization in the world was there. And I got to be there representing just WCS is just one of those all-star organizations. So that was very cool. And I worked for the Department of Education. I got in the Drug-Free Schools and Communities program. I got sent to do a presentation on how to do a crisis communications in that. And I thought that was great. Starting my own business, and when my business was really doing very well, I was thrilled with the fact that I was able to bring some super talented colleagues in and when we had a good little run. So, you know, that was and right now what I'm really excited about is the group of mostly younger direct reports that I have. And as I say to all of them, if I decide to win lottery tomorrow and leave, I want to leave knowing that you guys are ready to step in without me. And they're all doing a great job. So that's one of those works in progress that I'm also really proud of. And I'm a big believer, Richard, in the little moments. I don't look for these colossal ta-das because there's so many little moments in life that if you grab a whole bunch of them, boy, you're gonna have your pockets are just gonna be filled. So, you know, meeting someone like Tino is one of those little great little moments. And last year when we were at that super Italian restaurant in the middle of a sweltering heat in Vegas and two of us are drinking shot glasses full of red wine, I'm like, not only do I have a really good new vendor, but building a relationship, that's one of those little moments that I'm proud of. That was good wine.
It was. That was at Batista's, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. That place has been there forever. That's like a, it's like an institution in Vegas, right behind the Flamingo. And if anybody's listening and you haven't been there, they have the menu, they have it on the walls on, you know, listed, and they give you all the wine you can drink with the meal. So you get everything inclusive. You just pick your meal and as much red wine or white wine as you want. Typical Italian, right?
Yeah, yeah. But Rich, in all seriousness, it's like every single day there's so much crossing my desk that other people are a part of that just makes me, when I see it come together and I see that it worked, it could be something as simple as a direct mail campaign, or it could be something as simple as an email append that we get a really good, you know, return on. I say, yeah, I left for, you know, I take my hour and a half drive home and say, yeah, today was another good day, and just another good day. And it's like every once in a while is a great day. Very rarely is there a lousy day. But you keep piling up those, yeah, it was a good day, it was a good day. And next thing you know, you're proud of just the body of work that you've done over a period of time. And I'd much rather be the slow and steady than the flash in the pan, because flash in the pans burn out. And, you know, my experience is most of them don't have any substance to them anyway. You know, run silent, run deep is probably a better way. But, you know, who knows what tomorrow will bring. Could be another, you know, right? We never know.
Absolutely. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
That was Richard.
Oh, it was Richard. Oh, okay. All right, let's go to the next question. Hang on one sec. Here we go. Okay, here's.
Hey,
hello.
Michael,
good evening. You have a question for Michael.
Michael. Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah, who's this?
My name's Doug. You know, I was checking out your LinkedIn page. And
Doug,
I,
where are you from?
Saw that you had this background in journalism.
Long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, how do you, like now, how do you get your journalism, talent out there doing what you're doing
now? Yeah, my fix. Yeah, yeah. I joke with friends. I said, when I was younger, I wanted to be this great, you know, this great journalist. And the only thing I write now are emails. It's just, you know, it's transition. I was an adjunct journalism professor for 12 years. And so that was very rewarding, but I was able to keep my journalism skills. There's a lot of writing and editing that I still get myself involved with. I drive my advertising manager, Wendy, nuts. Every time she comes in with something, I immediately grab a red pen and get ready to edit. But yeah, you know, the reality is, Doug, that I don't get that fixed that much anymore. It's just not, you know, you do have to sometimes let go of certain elements.
Right.
You know, I don't know how many bylines I've had over the years, probably a couple of thousand. And, you know, it is what it is. Every once in a while I get to write something that's more than bullet points. But that's okay, because there are things that I'm doing now, you know, analyzing, you know, profitability of our bus program. And, you know, as my dad said to us, if you're doing your career right, as you're progressing, you're doing more with your head and less with your hands. So if writing is with the hands and analysis is with the head, I guess I've progressed down the path a little bit. But I don't know, maybe one day, maybe one day I'll go back to writing after I retire. Maybe I'll be a media consultant and do some freelance writing on the side. As long as I can continue to have an imagination, you can continue to write. So, but Doug, where are you from? You from the casino world or from the journalism world?
No, I'm from the casino world. I'm based in LA. So,
oh, okay.
Maybe you can write a book about the Long Island, Little Italy connection and where you stand from.
Yeah, I don't think some of the people who came from Little Italy don't
want us to
write
recipes. A lot of recipes.
They don't want us to write books about them. They rather we don't talk about it, you know.
Doug, thanks a lot. Thanks for the call.
All right,
thank you, Doug.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay.
All right, see you guys.
All right. Okay, we got a special call in here. Hang on. Let's see here.
Hello?
Hello? Are you there? Yeah, you're here. Michael, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, good. All right, I think we're almost out of time, but I had a so Brad and Mr. Molina couldn't call in, but Brad told me to ask you about your coffee, your dry rub. Tell us a little bit about that. It's got to be special if he's asking me to talk about it. So,
well,
tell us
Brad,
a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, Brad Egner, Brad's is our VP of marketing and really good guy. And Brad and I have this secret alliance that's no longer a secret, but that's it. And I always say to him, Brad, you take care of all the headaches above you, and I'll take care of all the headaches below me. And so he does a great job managing all the C-suite expectations. And Brad was a Southern boy at heart. Actually had a very successful fried chicken restaurant down south for a while. So Brad he went to culinary school, so he's no slouch in the kitchen. Yeah, I don't go to steakhouse, even though the casino has a really good steakhouse, RW Prime. But I don't get excited about going to steakhouses because I always say to my wife, I can make a steak just as good at home. And I made last week for her, myself, and my son salt, a little bit of salt because I've cut back on salt. Salt, pepper, garlic powder, and you take fresh coffee beans. And don't get a flavor. Don't get French vanilla or his. Just simple coffee beans. You grind them up, pat it on, nice big patty of raw. Leave it in the fridge for a couple of hours. Take it out, cast iron pan on the stove, super hot, and then throw them on. And as soon as you throw them on, you turn the heat way down to low. There's enough resilient heat in the cast iron. You put them for 3 minutes. You give it the half turn to get the hash marks. You flip them over 3 more minutes, medium rare. Serve with a side salad and a glass of red, and you're done.
Wow! So you actually use the grind, the coffee grinds on the meat.
It gives a tremendously flavorful crust right on the top.
Wow.
Oh, it just.
Oh, I gotta tell you. So how do you grind it? Do you grind it fine?
Yeah, I grind. You have your coffee grinder, and you throw your beans in, and it's
right.
It's I use equal amounts of salt, pepper, and coffee. I always go a little bit extra on garlic because I'm Italian. I put garlic on my cornflakes in the morning, but it just creates a flavor that you're almost never going to find in a steakhouse, and I don't believe in sauces and marinades and all that. I like my meat.
Wow, I have to try that. Decaf or regular coffee?
No. We don't have decaf. No decaf.
I know.
No decaf.
I'm just joking.
No decaf and no light beer.
When we were in Italy with my wife for the first time, two things happened with the coffee. First of all, she ordered decaf at the bar, the espresso bar, and the guy just looked at her, and then he calls out to his wife, "Hey, Mari, do we have the decaf?" You know, in Italian, right? And so all you can hear is the lady in the back rummaging in the back trying to find decaf, right? Because they never make it. The second thing was we kept getting these cappuccinos, and they were cold. Because in Italy, men don't order cappuccinos, just women order them. And so Marcy was like, what's going on here? The cappuccino's cold. So I asked the guy, right? He goes, oh, yeah, we don't make it hot because it burns the women's lipstick. They don't like that, you know? So the coffee thing is a very serious thing. Michael, it's been a great show. I really, really enjoyed our show and, definitely want you back on in the future. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. And, thanks for the great relationship. The work that you and Golly do for us is invaluable. And looking forward to doing more work together. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks, buddy. We'll see you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. What a great show. Michael's definitely a character. And it's amazing. We haven't had anybody on the show that didn't come from the casino business. So that was a new thing. We got some great shows coming up. The next show is absolutely amazing. I have Lauren Westerfield on March 8th. and she's the corporate vice president of Interactive Marketing and Stations. And that kind of kicks off our Women in Marketing series. We have a huge lineup of women. We have Suzanne Trout, who's the CMO of Foxwoods, Colleen Birch, who's the senior VP of Revenue Optimization at the Cosmopolitan, Carrie Smith, who's this SVP General Manager at the Agua Caliente, and a whole bunch of other people. So please tune in, check out our lineup, and come in and ask questions. And remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen to it. Thank you, and God bless.